You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends of Fantasy Benefits Podcast.
But are you saying Will Myers is Mike Trout?
I am saying...
Mike Trout light.
I'm saying Will Myers is better than Mike Trout because Will Myers played 155 games. Duh.
Oh, okay.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
An absolute train wreck, but absolute radio gold all at the same time. Like, it was so just insane that I couldn't turn away, but I enjoyed the hell out of it.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Good, man. Celebrating truck day the best way possible.
I'm not going to have you explain to me what truck day is on air.
Well, you know how there's like Groundhog Day?
Just stop it. Just stop it.
Say, this is a day for trucks. That's all I got. It makes sense when you figure out, if you knew where I worked at, like it would make a lot more sense. But apparently I'm not the only one that celebrated Truck Day because our guest had a story too. We won't bore you with it, but we'll introduce him now. So
our special guest this week is George Bissell of Baseball Prospectus. George, welcome back to the show.
Hey Justin, how's it going? What's going on, Matt? It's great to be here. This is one of my favorite podcasts out there. So it's awesome to be back. I'm looking forward to talking some fantasy baseball with you guys. It's day after the Super Bowl and baseball season right around the corner. Let's get it going.
Yeah, everybody, you know, George and Matt and I have already been like full force into baseball, but everybody right. else now gets to join kind of the fantasy baseball realm and start actually, you know, trying to catch up to us. So,
you know, what's a good way to catch up, Justin? Mm. I wonder if there's a website out there that did 30 team previews and 30 pods they could listen to.
I'm sure I've heard of one. I'm sure I was part of like 75% of those pods. So
yeah. No, but if you're just jumping into the baseball season with football ending, make sure you check out all those team previews we did. We spent a lot of time on them, and I think they went well. So
also go check out the Flags Fly Forever podcast that Baseball Prospectus does. George is on that. It is fantastic. I just listened to episode where you guys had Rudy Gamble on, and the last 15 minutes of that episode is an absolute train wreck, but absolute radio gold all at the same time. Like it was so just insane that I couldn't turn away, but I enjoyed the hell out of it.
It's in my queue. I haven't got to listen yet. I need to do that.
Yeah, it was really fun having Rudy on. We had him on about 2 years ago. We had him on to talk second baseman. So we did your standard positional preview, and then we got a little bit off the rails, so to speak, at the end there. And that's what makes the podcast a lot of fun. We have a lot of great guests, and I'm on there with Mike Gianella and Brett Sayre, my colleagues at Baseball Prospectus. And it's been a couple years now, and it's so much fun to do. And by the way, Justin, I have to congratulate you really quickly on your new gig there with the Sleeper and the Bust over at Fangraphs. Well, another one of my favorites, and congratulations on jumping into the host chair there. That's really big. So
yeah, thank
congrats,
you.
Man.
Haven't announced it officially here, but yeah, for those who don't follow me on social media, Matt and I kind of teased it last week. when we had James Anderson on, but I'm officially going to be a co-host. I don't want to say I'm replacing Eno Saris because I don't think anybody can do that. And if the listeners are expecting me to, they're going to be sorely, sorely disappointed. So, but it should be a lot of fun. Paul and I have a pretty good rapport that we've developed on this podcast when he's guested, and then on Sleeper and the Bust there where I've been producing. So it should be a lot of fun. So, yeah, definitely check that one out, too. George, why don't you tell people where you can be reached on social media and then everything you do over at BP?
Absolutely. You can read all my work at baseballprospectus.com. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at George Bissell. Just two quick plugs here. We have right now going on at BP the Fantasy Positional Series. We're doing 21 articles per week per position because 20 just isn't enough. You need that 21st article in there every single week going position by position. So right now we're recording this on February 5th, and we have shortstop week going on right now. We've breezed through catcher, first base, second base, third base. We'll do outfielders next week. So that's one of my favorite times of the year whenever we roll through that. You can also purchase the Baseball Prospectus Annual. It's in stores now. You can buy it on Amazon. It's just started shipping. And I wrote the Miami Marlins chapter. It's my first time doing one of the chapters in the books, the player comments. So that was a big deal, and that's one of those like bucket list things you check off. That's very cool. So the amount of like hard work and effort that goes into creating that is staggering, and I hope everybody who enjoys baseball will enjoy reading that work, and everybody should go buy it because I'm in it and I think it's awesome. So well, definitely go check those out.
I know Matt and I get one every year. Yep. So yep. Everybody should go out and definitely get the BP annual, and yeah, definitely check out. If you're not subscribing to BP, I think you're probably being left behind a little bit. It's a fantastic organization, so and that way you can
appreciate
read all of George's work. And then yeah, definitely listen to Flags Fly Forever. Are you on Tino?
I'm the producer of the Tino podcast, so that one's that's a little bit of the wilder. It is the mullet of the fantasy section at Baseball Prospectus. That is where the party goes on. That is with Craig Goldstein, Ben Carsley, and Brett Sayer. That's a whole different animal, and it's changed a little bit for this year. It's no longer exclusively talking about dynasty leagues, so I think it's gonna be a little bit different, but it's still the same old Tino that you've gotten used to. So yeah, definitely check all that out. I have a lot of fun working over there. So yeah.
All right, and then you can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTopFWFB. And me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Friends of Fantasy Benefits first ever draft guide will be coming out shortly as soon as I finish editing it and getting Matt's last prospect pieces. So
yep.
Look forward to that. God, I think it's about 250 pages. So enjoy.
Oh, my goodness.
Impressive.
Yeah, it's been a real joy to edit. So if you see grammatical errors, it's because I do most of the editing at 4 o'clock in the morning.
But, a lot of typos.
Yeah, exactly. Why don't we just jump right in, though? We are doing positional previews as well right now. We are a little bit behind you guys. We're at the first base time. I wanted to talk about some MLB free agents. Matt and I had a discussion a little while ago in our staff chat about when we start dropping MLB free agents in our ranks. Before we get to that, let's talk real quick about Todd Frazier, because Todd Frazier signed with the Mets, a two-year, $17 million deal, if I'm remembering correctly.
Got it.
Will most likely play third base, maybe some first base if Adrian Gonzalez doesn't work out. So, Matt, what are your thoughts on Todd Frazier going to the Mets?
Yeah, it's an interesting move for Frazier. You like him to be in a little more offensive ballpark, but he should have, you know, his fair share of playing time, like you said, especially when Adrian Gonzalez fails. And they got Wilmer Flores around there, probably against lefties. Probably Frazier probably plays first base against lefties or Flores, and then Frazier would play third base full time against righties, probably. But Frazier's an interesting player, and his fantasy value kind of took a steep decline last year. You saw the average. I mean, he's not much of a batting average asset the last 2 years. You're looking at 225 and 213 is that batting average. But the big drop off for me, surprisingly, was the stolen base total. He went from 15 steals all the way down to 4 last year. His home runs went down from 40 to 27, but that was mostly a playing time issue. He had 120 less at bats than he did the previous season, and only had 13 home runs less. I mean, so he was actually at a quicker pace than normal, but he just missed some time. But with him, you know what you're getting: a low batting average guy, a guy that hits a crazy amount of fly balls. Hence, that's why the batting average will be low. And if you're in an OBP league, I mean, I don't expect a 340 OBP like last season. I mean, it was propped up a lot because he was hit by surprisingly 14 hit by pitches, which is a serious spike over the last few years. So he's not going to be as an OBP asset like he was last year, but he's a guy that you know what you're getting here. If he gets regular playing time, which no reason he shouldn't, he's going to hit 25 to 30 home runs, maybe more, hit about 210, 220, and, you know, combined runs and RBIs should be around the 130 to 140 mark, or at least. And that's a good late-round flyer. I know, Justin, I know you're a Fraser guy, but the stolen bases, I don't think they're ever going to come back, which isn't that hot of a take for a guy that's going to be 32. But it's a nice signing for the Mets. I don't really know why the Mets would do it, because the one thing they have a lot of bodies at is their corner infield spots. And if Todd Frazier's your only acquisition, him and Jay Bruce, why make those acquisitions, I guess, because it's not enough. But I don't know. Frazier is what he is at this point, and it's a declining asset and one I'm not particularly interested in.
George, what are your thoughts on Frazier?
Frazier's the exact type of hitter who I think is most adversely impacted by the league-wide context. Agreed. In baseball right now. You looked at 117 guys at 20-plus homers last year, which is major league record. This type of power production league-wide, it hurts guys like Frazier, who are power and counting stats only type of guys. Matt touched on it, but if the speed's not coming back, it's hard to envision a scenario in which Frazier's a really valuable commodity in more shallow mixed leagues. I look at his numbers last season, and going by my colleague Mike Gianella's retrospective player valuations in 15-team mixed leagues, Todd Frazier earned $6 last year, which is roughly equivalent to what Jason Hayward, Hunter Pence, Nori Aoki, Kurt Suzuki, and Danny Valencia did. So that's not an impressive group of hitters. And in our third base rankings, which came out last week, he was outside the top 20 names. He was at the bottom of the two-star tier, which is barely scraping mixed league relevance. So I just find it difficult to imagine a scenario which Frazier, even if he hits 20 home runs, it's such a low batting average, the counting stats won't be great. He's not going to run anymore. I have a hard time seeing a lot of upside in his profile. And when you get to those later rounds with guys, I want someone who can give me more. Frankly, I don't understand the move, because Wilmer Flores is fine against right-handed pitching. He's not great. He's definitely better against left-handers, but he can hold his own. And I don't know why they need to limit him to a platoon role here. So I'm one of the Wilmer Flores fans out there. I think he's a guy who's on the precipice of becoming a solid everyday guy and someone who matters in fantasy. And to see them bring in someone who could challenge him for at-bats and take away playing time, I think that's a little discouraging for me, at least.
You remember when Wilmer Flores was being rumored to be traded for Carlos Gomez? And he, you know, he got told like halfway through the game, and he started crying on the field. You think he's crying now because he's still on the Mets? Because they just won't give this kid a chance to play. Like, I just don't get why they hate Wilmer Flores so much in New York.
Well, it's tough. Yeah. I think Flores, you look at, there's the perception that he can't handle an everyday job because he's not so good against right-handed pitching, and I don't know about that. I think that's sort of a flawed narrative. He's a guy last year who made some tremendous strides, and I don't get it. Like, it doesn't make any sense why they're sort of messing with him, because a year ago, I mean, he had, what, 18 home runs, batted 270.
Mm-hmm. Hit 11 of those home runs against right-handed pitching, went hit 262 against right-handed pitching. I mean, you're pretty much guaranteeing that Todd Frazier is going to be going like 240 at the best. Like the,
right, like how much better is Todd Frazier than Wilmer Flores, really?
He's not at all. I mean,
it's not. I'd rather have Flores, I think, honestly.
I mean, maybe defensively he is a better – I don't even know if that's the truth, though, at this point in Frazier's career, though. So I feel bad for Wilmer Flores. This pretty much makes virtually the entire Mets infield irrelevant for me. You know, it further buries Dom Smith, who seems to be on the shit list of the Mets as well. So,
yeah.
You know, not that he was going to ever be super interesting anyways, but at what point do you just stop sending this kid to Vegas? This is so Mets. All right, let's talk real quick.
What are they gonna do with Asdrubal Cabrera and Jose Reyes and Amed Rosario and?
Well, Reyes is a free agent, I believe, right?
They re-signed him.
Oh, did they? I didn't even see that.
Yeah, he's a utility guy. So you still have Asdrubal Cabrera. David Wright is kind of still there, I guess. And it's
projected to start the year on the DL and stay there the rest of the year.
Yeah, I'm sure, but he's still there, and I guess it'll be a way to sell tickets in September. It'll be David Wright farewell tour.
It's not as bad as the Royals re-signing Elcides Escobar to block Romandisi.
Yeah,
but it's pretty bad because you do have a solid starter, it looks like, in Wilmer Flores. And you're not bringing in a clearly superior guy in Todd Frazier. Frazier's a fine player, but he's exactly the type of guy who doesn't have a lot of fantasy value if he's going to be a power and counting stats guy.
So right now I'm at Fangraphs, we're writing the player caps for the top of the pages, the player pages. And I got – who did I get? I got someone on the Royals. And instead of writing about them, I ended up just making little slights at Alcides Escobar.
I think the worst part of all that too is like – they announced the Escobar signing as Escobar having an everyday job, and then it was Mondesi and Merrifield are going to fight it out for second base.
Mm-hmm. Makes absolutely like, no
sense. I was just like, what?
What Merrifield's up there? Like, what the hell, man?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
How did these two teams play each other in the World Series? I just don't get it.
Not that long ago either.
No, it was 2 years ago. I mean, all right. Let's talk about other MLB free agents, not necessarily from a specific sense in break them down. But Matt and I had a discussion in our staff chat the other day, and Matt posed the question, at what point do we start dropping these MLB free agents who haven't signed in our ranks? We have a number of guys who haven't signed, and it is getting pretty close to pitchers and catchers reporting. That's going to be happening in the next week or so. So, George, at what point are you going to start dropping these guys in your ranks?
I probably won't. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm less concerned about hitters than I am pitchers. Obviously, pitching's a whole different animal because you have to be on a schedule. You have to be able to face live batters. You have to be able to work on the things that you need to get ready for the season as a pitcher. It's a lengthier process. It usually takes a couple of weeks to ramp up. So if those guys, like, for example, Yu Darvish, someone like that, if they're not in camp and not facing live hitters, and going through the process of what they need to do to get ready, then I start to get a little bit concerned as we get closer towards the season. But I look at, for example, JD Martinez, okay? Let's say he doesn't sign until late in spring training. He missed a month of the season last year. He didn't come back till, I want to say, mid-May, and he still ended up with 45 homers and is one of the best hitters in baseball from a fantasy context. I'm not that concerned about these guys getting into camp because I don't think it takes that long for hitters to get ready, especially the veteran guys. You know, obviously you want to see a couple, have a couple of days facing live pitching, but how long does it really take them to get ready? It's not like they're going to be sitting at home on the couch, you know, eating Doritos and not doing anything. These guys are still going to be there. I heard of, I think it was a Jeff Passan who wrote about it. There might be a free agent camp this year where guys go and other free agents all scrimmage against each other. Like,
I hope it's in Montreal.
It's a weird situation, but I don't really start to get concerned until you get right up to the point in the season where it's like, okay, JD Martinez isn't signing and opening day is next week. Then I'd start to get concerned. But I wouldn't start docking guys just because there's a chance maybe they miss a week or something crazy. I think it's worrying about something too much. That's a non-issue for me.
All right, Matt. I know it's not a non-issue for you, so why don't you go ahead
right.
and give your rebuttal.
I think J.D. Martinez for me is a different case because I don't think I'd drop him per se because I think he's – I'm a J.D. Martinez fanatic. I think he's one of the top 10 hitters in baseball, maybe even top five, just pure offensive hitters. I love the swing and everything he's done and all the adjustments and everything. Everything is – he's proven himself over and over again as a top hitter, so I'm not necessarily worried about him. But I think guys like Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, even like before today signing like Todd Frazier, guys like Brandon Phillips and all them guys like even lower down in the tiers, I think I dropped them significantly just because, you know, you look, are you comfortable going in? Well, let's see. I'm going to pull up. I'll stick to first baseman since, you know, we're going to talk about Hosmer a little bit later, so I don't really want to, you know, dive into that too much. But like, look at a guy like Mike Moustakas. We'll go to third, like, how many teams do you see now at this point of the offseason that are going to sign him? And you could be left with a guy who now all of a sudden has an abbreviated spring training, which baseball players are of all sports, of all athletes, seem to be creatures of habit more than anything else. And if you mess up a routine, I mean, it could ruin their entire season. Remember, was it Kenji's Morales who like sat out an entire spring training? Was it him a couple years back and didn't sign, and then his year was completely in the tank?
He was coming off a major injury, though.
Right. Yeah. So maybe it's not the best example, but it's the most recent one I can find a player sitting on. Yeah, go ahead. But, I mean,
I understand your concern, Matt. I think we need to have just a broader conversation about this free agent class, because I think when it really comes down to it, guys, there are offers on the table. We know Eric Hosmer has multiple offers. J.D. Martinez has, what, a five-year, $120 million offer from at least, I believe, the Red Sox. Right. Guys have offers. They're just choosing to hold out. And I think we could see a scenario similar to what happened with Nelson Cruz a few years ago with some of these guys like Moustakas and maybe lower-end hitters. We saw it with Logan Morrison last year, I believe, where he just didn't get any offers in the last team to offer him a job was the Rays, and he took it. I think we could see some of these hitters take one-year deals and reset their market and try and go join the class next year of 2018. And maybe they're hoping that there are some changes to the CBA in the meantime. I don't know if there will be a player's strike. I don't want to say it's going to happen or anything like that, right. But it's not a stretch for me to envision a scenario in which all these guys say, you know what, if I'm not going to get big money right now, I'm obviously not going to sit out half the year just to prove a point, but I'll take a one-year deal and then try and get paid next year. And maybe the CBA changes and teams are more incentivized to spend on veteran talent and free agency. That's sort of what I see happening is I can't imagine all these guys sitting out, but maybe – they take just cheap one-year deals and try and rejoin the market again in a year.
See, like, I understand completely behind that reasoning, but then you got a guy like, what about a guy like Eduardo Nunez? If he signs with a bad team, he's a starter and has a lot of value. If he signs with a good team, because he can fit anywhere, you know, being a utility guy, if he signs with a team like, say, the Red Sox again, whatever, where he was last year for most of the season or half the season, if he signs there, he's not going to start. So how big of a investment are you going to make in a guy like that in an NFBC format or anything like that? I mean, you have to factor that in a guy like that.
Right. I think you also run the risk of where you discount them. There's a chance that you're also missing out on potential profit opportunities there. Like you said, if he does sign in a favorable situation and he's productive and you were discounting him too much, then you end up missing on a lot of guys. So
agreed.
I'd be worried about that more than I would be potentially overpaying for someone like Nunez, who maybe doesn't get the playing time I would envision. But Nunez is a weird case because he's such a good fantasy hitter, but not
right
in the mindsets of most people, like a traditionally very good hitter. Double-digit homers and steals usually from Nunez. So, like, he's a weird case too, but that's the thing for me. I think I'd be more worried about discounting guys and then missing out on profit if they end up finding a good situation and having things work out. Because one injury changes things, right? We saw this a few years ago with I'm forgetting who it was.
Prince Fielder benefited off.
There
of,
it is.
Was it Victor Martinez got injured, tore his ACL or something like that?
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
But I mean, even that happened in January. Like, it wasn't like we were waiting this long for it. I'm not going to start discounting hitters. You know, part of me wants to discount Hosmer a little bit because I think Park really matters to him, especially power potential. But it's not like he's going to be in a worse park than he was in last year or with much worse of a lineup that he could be if he was still in Kansas City. So I'm not going to worry about it too much for hitters. For pitchers, and I think, George, you alluded to this, these guys need to be throwing pitches and they need to be throwing innings and building up strength. And if they're not in camp on time, I'm going to start getting a little worried. You, Darvish, not so much. But guys like Arrieta and Cobb, especially guys who have had serious injury issues in the past, I'm going to start getting a little bit worried about them having to ramp up their activity or having to prepare on their own without the assistance of the teams with them. But I think we're already seeing discounts on some of these guys. I mean, Darvish is unfairly going too low right now based on what he did in the World Series with what appeared to be balls covered in Crisco. So, I'm not too worried about this. If we're a few weeks down the road and we're talking like, you know, spring training games have started, then I may start getting a little bit worried. But if I'm in an early draft, I'm not worrying about it too much right now.
Exactly. Yep. I'm with you there.
All right. Let's move on into our first baseman. What I've done is I've come up with, I think, 7 groupings of guys, kind of little player debate type things. So that way you guys can kind of touch on as many guys as you want out of this group. And I want to start with guys who are near each other in ADP. So Cody Bellinger, Anthony Rizzo, both going near each other in ADP this year, according to NFBC. George, who would you rather have and why?
It's a tough decision. I'm probably going to take Rizzo just because of the track record of what we've seen him do over the last couple of seasons. Just going back, I think in the last 4 years, he's hit .282. So you feel fairly confident in the batting average. Probably a guy who gets close to, if not eclipses, 30 home runs. Counting stats are going to be there. You're looking at probably 100 RBIs and runs scored. My issue isn't necessarily with Cody Bellinger, who by the way, I think if you draft Bellinger, you probably want to use him at outfield. Mm-hmm. Just because the replacement level, I think, is significantly lower in the outfield than it is at first base. So I'd probably use him in the outfield if I drafted Bellinger, but I'd probably take Rizzo just because of the security and that Cubs lineup's still really good. It's a nice place to hit. I got to lean Rizzo because we've seen him do it year after year, and I like Cody Bellinger a lot, but he had quite a year, and man, I just don't know about the steals because he stole 10 bases last year, and that matters a lot because I think only Will Myers and Ian Desmond and Goldschmidt were the only guys with double digit steals at first base last year. So look, if he's not running as much, it's clearly Rizzo who's the guy here for me.
All right, Matt, where are you at on this one?
It's close for me as well, but I'm also going to lean Rizzo because, you know, everyone talks about Bellinger and that big uppercut swing and everything like that. I wouldn't be surprised if the batting average kind of fell down into the tank a little bit this year for him. I mean, I could see him hitting. I wouldn't be all that shocked if he hit around .250, to be honest with you, just because there's a lot of swing and miss to his game. And there's not many safer, more consistent fantasy assets than Rizzo. I mean, the last 4 years, 32, 31, 32, and 32 home runs. Last 3 years, 101, 109, 109 RBIs. Batting average is .278, .292, .273, .286 the year before that. I mean, rock solid production. And the Cubs lineup actually had a lot of issues last year. And this is still, you know, they still don't have a top of the order hitter, which they kind of probably don't this year, but I don't know if it really matters as much. I think Schwarber will be better, and I think Schwarber will probably stick in that top part. which can only help Brian and Rizzo, you know, knock in more runs, obviously, and cause more havoc in the lineup. I mean, that those two are an incredible duo in the middle of a lineup. And, I mean, people forget Rizzo, the stolen bases came back. He had 10 stolen bases last year. I know Bellinger had 13 or 14 or something like that, but I don't think between AAA and the majors, I would be surprised if, you know, if I bet you their stolen base totals are both pretty similar again this year. Rizzo probably will have something like 8 or something, and I can see Bellinger getting 12. But are those 4 extra stolen bases and worth the 30 points in batting average potentially? And, I mean, yeah, Bellinger probably hits more home runs, which I would bet on that if I mean, they're both going to be, I think, in the 30 to 40 range. I think Bellinger falls back a little bit this year just because the league catches up with him. So I'm going Rizzo, but I mean, I don't hate Bellinger either. And George made a good point about using Bellinger in the outfield. It was probably the better move anyways. I'll go Rizzo, and there's not a lot of safer guys out there, man.
I want to be careful, though, about the whole using Bellinger in the outfield. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad strategy. I don't think that there is any position that is that much deeper than another, especially when we're talking about like 15-team mixed leagues. Each position has got is fairly deep this year, but has huge cliffs. And while first base is deep, I don't know how many people are going to be really comfortable with guys like Yonder Alonso or Brandon Belt or Logan Morrison as their starting first baseman. So.
How deep is that league that where you're starting Brandon Belt, though? Like, how deep is the league, really?
I mean, it has to be insanely deep. Well, I mean, in a 15-team league, Brandon Belt is going, you know, before the reserves in a lot of leagues.
It doesn't mean he's starting now. I agree with your point. Okay, this is one of the big things that I think is an issue in the industry right now, and that's production is production, right? You can get stolen bases at any position. You can get home runs at any position. You can get batting average. Production's production. But you're right. Positional scarcity, it's kind of faded from the lexicon. This is what I wrote this week in the state of the position at shortstop. Now, shortstop used to be a wasteland, and it's not anymore.
It's probably the deepest it's ever been.
Exactly. I mean, the influx of talent, the uptick league-wide from a power standpoint, and a shift away from older veterans towards younger, cheaper, in quotes, alternatives. That's the big change at shortstop and a lot of these other positions. And sure, positional scarcity is gone, but now we have category scarcity. And steals are – there's more value tied to stolen bases and batting average. And for pitchers, innings pitched, than I can recall in a long time. So the landscape has definitely shifted. But I do think first base – like. The replacement level is like Lucas Duda, who is probably a 240 hitter who hits 25 plus homers. Like,
if he finds a team.
Right.
That's a real question. Like, I mean, where is – he's not re-signing with the Mets. I mean, so, like – and I like Duda, but, like, for instance, you know, you've got, like, Eric Thames, who's going 187th in NFBC ADP at first base. And I use him because he also has outfield eligibility, so it's easy for me to sort first into the outfield. Got outfielders going behind him that I would feel more comfortable with waiting on outfield and not filling my first base position with him. Bradley Zimmer, Odubel Herrera, Corey Dickerson, Delino DeShields, Aaron Hicks. I mean, there's a lot of outfielders going after that spot that I would much rather plug a guy like Bellinger into my first base position and fill my outfielder later.
Well, you start 5 outfielders, though, so naturally there's going to be more guys there who matter. I don't have a problem with it. If you want to use Bellinger at first base, like, do it. I don't care personally. It's your fantasy team. You can do whatever you want with it, right? That's
George.
The fun of the game. not you, Justin, but, you know, if people listen to this podcast, like, if you want to use Marwin Gonzalez at, like, first base, like, go for it. Like, I don't care. Fine. But I do think the replacement level is probably higher at first base than a lot of other positions is my point. I mean, look at how many guys last year you rattled off a few of the names, like, but like the Ryan Zimmermans of the world, Matt Reynolds, like, guys who just came out of nowhere and had Justin Smoke.
But do my question is, do we feel comfortable about those guys repeating what they did last year?
Justin Smoke,
Smoke could do. Yep.
Yes. Yeah. All right. He's the real deal.
We'll get to Smoke here in a minute. I'm on the Rizzo train as well. I wrote the player cap over on him over at FanGraphs as well. I believe I used the word Votovian, as in very similar to Joey Votto in terms of the walk rate. Love him in OBP leagues. I feel like he is maybe being discounted a little bit this year because so many people are on the Joey Votto and Freddie Freeman trains, and you know they should be, but I mean
Freeman.
Yeah, I mean, I just love what Rizzo can do. He's going to be fantastic again this year. You don't really get much more consistent guy. He's got an at least 600 plate appearances in each of the last five seasons, 30 home runs in each of the last four seasons. Pretty stable triple slash. So I'm all for taking Rizzo, especially if I'm getting him towards the end of the second round.
I'm with you.
Let's go ahead and move on to two guys. We got one who is kind of the young and up-and-comer, breaking out on the scene late last year. Fantastic in his 50-game stretch was Rhys Hoskins versus Edwin Encarnacion, who I can't seem to pronounce his name this week. So, Matt, who would you rather have, the old vet or the young up-and-comer?
We've debated this before, and I'm going to go E5 still for at least this year. I've gone against the hot young prospect twice already now at Bellinger and Hoskins, but there's a little bit of
unknown. You're a really shitty prospect analyst, obviously.
Right. There's a little bit too much unknown with Hoskins still in his major league sample. He never really had – pitchers didn't get time to adjust to him. And one alarming thing, too, is his contact rate in August was 82%, and in September it dropped all the way down to 67%. Now, I'm not saying you should bet the house on a month-long sample of contact rate or anything like that, but he never showed the ability to readjust after pitchers started to figure him out a little bit in the latter half of the season. So I'm going to go with E5 just because when I'm drafting this high, I'm going to take the steady sure thing. And E5 is as consistent as it gets. He's going to flirt with 40 home runs, probably hit around 260. He's got Lindor and Jose Ramirez hitting in front of him, two nice hitters right there. So didn't really – yeah, he saw the numbers drop a little bit from moving from Toronto to Cleveland, but I expect him to be right where he was in 2017 again this year.
George, what's your take on these two?
I think Rhys Hoskins is definitely going to get drafted ahead of Edwin Encarnacion because of the outfield eligibility. If he was strictly a first baseman, I think it's Encarnacion, but I think that sort of – dual eligibility, the flexibility that he's going to provide, I think has a little bit of value, and I think that the perception of that value is going to drive up his ADP. I think he'll definitely go ahead of Encarnacion in drafts this spring, but I feel like I'd take Edwin here because did you know that he has hit 30 home runs in six consecutive seasons dating back to 2012? I feel like whenever I talk about power is up league wide and you can find 20, 30 homers on the waiver wire. And I feel like it you still have to get power, right? You can't just say, well, I'll get it later. Cause then your margin for error, you have to hit on a lot of guys. It's very thin. Like you have to nail some of these late round power picks that you're investing in or really get lucky in free agency in season. So and Encarnacion's one of the safest power bets out there. Him and Nelson Cruz, I think, very similar in terms of you're going to get power production, and it's stable, and you get what you pay for. And I don't think you have to overpay for either one of those guys. You see that type of discount with older veterans just because they're not exciting, and oftentimes that's the path to getting value in a draft, especially in an auction, because it's just not exciting to be like, well, I bought Edwin. This year it was really fun. I mean, no one feels excited bidding on him,
right?
But like Rhys Hoskins is exciting. I mean, if you extrapolate those major league at bats, it's wow.
That's how you do it, right? You just
multiply exactly how it works right. Every time.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought. Yeah,
no, more people do it than you think.
I know.
it's scary to me sometimes. But I think Encarnacion, because he's not sexy, I think he's a guy who's actually a really nice target. He's I think he's going in the top 50 right now. I don't know, I have a number in front of me. I guess
current ADPs are 50th for Rhys Hoskins and 56 for E5.
Yeah. See, I like Encarnacion there. That's fine.
Yep, I'll take E5 as well.
In my NFBC league, E5 almost made it to me at pick 75 after I'd taken Rhys Hoskins earlier. And the only reason I took Hoskins over E5 is because I had already gotten E5 in like four drafts, and I didn't want to be overexposed to him this early in the draft season. But I have E5 ranked ahead of Hoskins pretty much for the reasons you guys said. I mean, you can literally just pencil in, you know, a 260 average, 38 to 42 home runs, over 100 RBI. I mean, it's just, you can pretty much pencil in the numbers and not, you know, I think the thing about Hoskins is he's got a huge ceiling, but he's also got a floor that we don't really know how old or how low it is. And so, I mean, the range of outcomes is huge for a guy like Rhys Hoskins. He could do, you know, something similar to what he did in that short stretch over the course of a whole year, or he could only hit 25 home runs and hit 240 and, you know, and maybe get injured because he shouldn't be playing the outfield, a guy his size. So, you know, we know exactly what E5 is going to give. So, I mean, for me, I'm more willing to take the guaranteed production, than take the risk, but, especially that early in a draft, but I understand why people do. And I do like the fact that he's got outfield eligibility, Rhys Hoskins does. But to me, I think you go with the safe bet, or the sure bet at least.
There's a lot to be said about being able to predict what someone's going to do. Mm-hmm. Like it's nice and easy to pencil in numbers. I mean, would it be completely surprising if Hoskins hit 240 with 25 home runs next year?
Yeah. I mean, that's one that the thing with taking a guy like E5, it allows you to take other risks later
on. Right, later on, higher, yes.
Like, I feel much more comfortable about going after a Bradley Zimmer or even, like, a Byron Buxton in the next round.
If I had E5 instead of Hoskins.
If I've got E5 instead of Hoskins. I don't feel I can make both those risks and really compete, you know, because one of them's probably guaranteed to fail. Whereas I know at least with E5, I've got a success story already written into my lineup.
Yep, agreed.
All right, let's move on to Eric Hosmer, the aforementioned Eric Hosmer, versus Will Myers. George, what are your thoughts on these two?
Funny you should ask. I'm taking Will Myers here, and I'll tell you why. It's the speed. You look at the numbers he's put up from a steal standpoint. I mean, how many guys steal 20 bases at first base? It's not a lot. I think Ian Desmond maybe has a shot to get there this year if he runs like he did last year. He ran a lot in a pretty limited sample. So, like, to me, Ian Desmond is maybe the most interesting first baseman out there this year. But I'm definitely taking Myers here for the speed. Look, the batting average wasn't great a year ago, but it almost doesn't matter. We look at his earnings in 15-team mixed leagues last year. Not a great year, but he still managed to return close to $20. Hosmer, to me, is he's so mercurial. Like, I never know what to expect from the guy anymore at this stage. I think last year was sort of the peak ceiling, and depending on where he ends up, that could impact his value. Look, I don't have a lot of Eric Hosmer thoughts. He's a guy I'm happy to let everyone else draft and worry about and try and figure out the fluctuations. But I think Myers is interesting because of the speed. And I don't think you can get steals in a lot of places. And to get it at first base, I think, is really nice.
Matt, what are your thoughts?
It's definitely Myers for me. And yeah, the batting average is a little bit lower than you would hope. Last year he hit .243, but he stole 20. But like you said, he went 30-20 last year. I'm gonna guess he was the only player to go 30-20 last year. So I mean, you're looking at a type
probably
of talent.
Jose Ramirez and Lindor didn't get there, but Jose Ramirez was close.
He's had to be close. I think he might have been 25. But either way, Myers is giving you something that not a lot of players can with the elite power speed combination.
Mike Trout went 33-22.
Well, that's obvious. Everyone knows Mike Trout, but
are you saying Will Myers is Mike Trout?
I am saying
Mike Trout light.
I'm saying Will Myers is better than Mike Trout because Will Myers played 155 games. Duh.
Oh, come on.
No, but
no. This is not a tight ad. No.
No, but the thing with Myers, though, for real, he had injury concerns that seemed to be past him with 157 games, 155 games played the last two seasons. Looking at high at-bat totals, obviously, it comes with that. His counting stats were down last year, but the roster around him was severely limited. The year before, he had just guys like Justin Upton and stuff like that, and this year he had Yangarvis, Solarte, and that was his supporting cast. So, yeah, the runs and RBI numbers took a little bit of a hit. But I like Will Myers, and it's not particularly close. Hosmer, I'm not betting on a 25-homer season again. That hits the ball on the ground too much. We don't know where the ballpark's going to be. But odds are it's either going to be Kansas City or San Diego, and neither one of them are that great for left-handed power. So I'll take Will Myers.
Do you know how many 30-20 seasons there have been in the last 5 years?
Six.
I have five.
Oh, I just guessed.
Okay. I thought you had it up. I was like, damn.
Will Myers, matter of fact. Will Myers is a generational talent.
No, so here's the list. Goldschmidt and Machado in 2015, Betts in 2016, Myers and Trout last year. So pretty select company. The batting average improves, like Will Myers is one of the most valuable players in fantasy.
Right. What if he hits 260? Right.
Right.
And repeats the other numbers. Yeah, that's a hell of a player.
It's well within the possibility of outcomes for him.
It is.
So. He's done it before. So, I mean, yeah. I like Will Myers.
He actually did it in 2016. So, I mean, I like Will Myers, too. I'm with you guys. You know, Eric Hosmer, another guy I did the player cap over on Fangraphs for. You know, like, outside of his BABIP, you know, and he did make better contact and more contact in 2017 than he had in 2016. But for the most part, it really feels like the huge jump in average was very BABIP inflated. He had a 351 BABIP last year. And some of that can be attributed to the better contact, but I don't think all of it can be. And so you got to think the average comes down. He hits a ton of ground balls. And I knew he hit a lot of ground balls, but I didn't realize he was like at a Christian Yelich rate.
It's not that bad. Yeah.
It's crazy.
It was 55.6% last year, and that was actually down over 3% from the year before. So, I mean, this is a guy who's always hit, you know, above 50% ground balls. And like Matt said, I think he's probably going to end up in either San Diego or in Kansas or back in Kansas City. So it's not like he's going to get a park improvement necessarily or even a lineup improvement. It's more than likely going to be a downgrade from what it was last year. So give me the power and the speed combo from Will Myers. I'll make up the batting average by pairing him with like a DJ LeMahieu or something like that. I'll be pretty stoked. All right. Let's talk about some guys who might be some batting average issues as well.
Is a nice way to put it.
Yeah. Joey Gallo, another guy I wrote about on the player caps. I must have just been having player caps on my mind when I was writing up these guys to talk about. But Joey Gallo is probably one of the most interesting stat lines from 2017. Had more home runs than he did singles. Had a walk rate that was absolutely amazing, and just struck out pretty much every single time he got up to bat. So George, Joey Gallo, or versus kind of the what seems to be one of the highest the most overinflated guys right now in draft season, which is Matt Olson of the A's.
Oh, God. I'm trying to figure out how I want to describe Matt Olson, but we'll do that in a minute. Look, Joey Gallo, I think this is one of those situations where you need to know your league format. If you play in an OBP league, there's a chance he's one of the top first basemen in fantasy baseball. Maybe not first base, but third base, definitely, where he's also eligible. I think Joey Gallo is an incredible hitter. The sort of stigma we have with striking out, it's fading, but it's still kind of there. And it bugs me because who cares if he strikes out a lot? This is fantasy baseball. Like, this is a guy who
is hitting eventually.
I don't really think so. Look, he had 41 home runs last year, and Gallo's a guy where if the power environment changes and we see a change to the manufacturing of the major league ball and we go back to previous power levels, those, you know, 40 plus home runs he's probably going to hit again, they start to look a lot more valuable. So just something to keep in mind with Joey Gallo. And I don't care if he bats 210, really. It just doesn't bother me. He also runs. Like, he had 7 steals last year.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Olson is – do you want to hear a crazy stat with Matt Olson? He slugged, like, 750 when he got recalled from AAA in late August through the end of the year. He slugged, like, 750 with one double or something like that. Like, it was just all home runs. Like, he had, like, 20-something home runs. And I've written about Matt Olson before. Look, there's a chance where you're either going to win your league because of Matt Olson or you're going to lose your league. Like, he's that type of guy. It sounds simplistic, but the floor is just so incredibly low here with Olson, where he really is swinging for the fences every single time, where you could get a pretty low batting average and not quite Gallo's power and no speed. And that to me is a little bit scary. I think Gallo's actually, I'm fine with taking him. Olson worries me a little bit more.
What I find interesting with Olson is Olson had 4 more plate appearances than Rhys Hoskins last year at the major league level, but hit 6 more home runs and nobody's talking about them.
The problem is you have to pay for all the upside with Olson on draft day right now. That's the issue. You're not getting a discount and getting
with Hoskins too, really.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, Hoskins is going 70 picks ahead of him.
That's fair.
I think it's fair too. But at the end of the day, I think maybe Matt Olson isn't getting the credit for what we saw from him last year because for some reason we were jumping all over Hoskins doing it. Olson was actually better in the same short sample.
I was writing about Matt Olson every week in the BP free agent watch. Like, he was outstanding down the stretch. I just think asking him to do it over a full season,
and it
could be bad here.
I agree.
He batted 259, and he could bat 209.
There's definitely a huge range of outcomes, very similar to what we're going to see with Hoskins. I have a hard time with Joey Gallo because I am the guy who always says, you know, punt batting average. I love punting batting average. And Joey Gallo would fit fantastically into that strategy. And so I'm really afraid that I'm going to get a ton of Joey Gallo shares this year and be like sinking my entire batting average on all my teams. I'm okay with doing it. The power is immense. Like you mentioned, the seven stolen bases were surprising because we really hadn't seen him steal a ton recently in the minor leagues or at the major league level.
Good athlete, though.
He's a fantastic athlete. And I mean, the crazy thing about Gallo is he actually improved the strikeout rate in the second half. It wasn't a ton, but I mean, he struck out 4% less than he did in the first half. So, like, if he can make another adjustment, you know, maybe become a little bit less of a free swinger, even by just a few percentage points. We're talking about a guy who has the potential to go 50-10 next year at third base for a pretty good, damn good offense in Texas. I really like Joey Gallo this year, so I'm going with him.
His line drive rate in the second half was actually really high. And if his batting average is palatable, like if it's 240, he's you're going to be amazed at where he ends up from an evaluation standpoint. And you might be like a $25, $30 player if that happens.
Mm-hmm. And I really think that there is a possibility that could happen. Like, I don't get me wrong. Again, there's a range of outcomes that he could be Chris Carter, and we're talking about a guy who is not in the major leagues halfway through the season next year. But I honestly believe, like, that this guy, if he can just put some things together, just improve the contact rate a little bit, we're talking about a guy who could be, you know, a top 50, top 40 player easily?
It's the widest range of outcomes of any hitter in baseball. It really is. It's got to be. Meta. I can't think of someone who has more a greater upside, but also a more terrifying potential floor. It's just there's no one for me.
Yeah, there's not much for me to add. I'm going Gallo, and for me, it's particularly not close, like you guys touched on. It's weird saying a guy that might hit 200 has a higher floor than anyone, but in this case, it's very, very true. I mean, Matt Olson's floor is triple A, and I think Gallo's floor is still, like we said, he's still going to, and plus there's always the added bonus that Adrian Beltre misses time and Gallo moves to third base and plays some time over there. He's already got the eligibility, but this is another avenue for him to get in the lineup. So I don't really trust Olson. I mean, I was on him as a prospect guy when he had that big season in the Cal League where he slugged .543 when he hit 37 homers. To put it in perspective, he slugged .651 and hit 24 homers in his brief major league call. So that's going down significantly, and no one's doubting that. But like you said, two doubles and 24 home runs. Like, what?
He sucked until August at the big league level, though. Yeah. Like, he wasn't. Right. He had some brief time, and he was terrible. So, look, they're both going in the. No, they're going in the same range of ADP. So, look, which.
Hence why
which
I
one
them.
Gets
it's crazy right? to me.
I don't get the Matt Olson. No. At this ADP, like, if you were going 100 picks later, sign me up. Great. I'll take the shot there. But he's going, what, near the top 100, 120-ish? That's insane to me. I can't do that on Matt Olson.
And well, also, there's a real good chance Matt Olson's a complete zero against lefties, too. So keep that in mind.
I think part of it is, and it maybe it was part of my argument we were talking about earlier, is, you know, the names going behind Matt Olson aren't names that a lot of people are super enthused by. Now, I think there are some good values, you know, Matt Carpenter, a guy who we're not talking about tonight, being one of them, you know, going 60 picks later. You know, guys like, you know, Chris Davis, who could virtually do what both these guys are doing, and that's Chris with a C, Davis, going at 248, you know, 100 picks later than these guys. But I think there's a lot of people who they start looking at these names going down the ADP and going, ooh, that's not who I want at my first base. So I'm going to grab Olson now because I think he's got some upside.
Chris Davis is so bad. He earned $3 in 15 team mixed leagues last year. That's less than Ozzie Albies did in like 100 plate appearances. So good work, Chris Davis.
We love.
Don't bring up Albies here. You're going on a tangent now.
Alex Smith earned more. You want to hear a depressing stat? Miguel Cabrera also earned $3 last year. So
that makes me sad.
No one's safe. No one's safe.
All right, let's move on to the next set. I know who George is going to take in this one. We got Greg Bird versus Justin Smoke, but I'll let you lead it off, George. And why don't you go ahead and tear Greg Bird to shreds?
No, everyone's a pundit on everything on Twitter, and why don't you like Greg Bird? Why don't you think Greg Bird is good? It's Greg Bird's fine. Right player, right skill set, right place, right time. Like, he could end up being pretty damn decent this year, but within the context of power league wide and especially at first base, does it matter if Greg Bird hits .250 with 25 homers this year? Not really. It's just not a difference maker. It's not that big of a deal. If he played a different position, yeah, Greg Bird, awesome. I'd be all over it. But look, I think I just can't do Greg Bird. I can't do it. I'm not gonna do it. I'd take Justin Smoke here, and it's not even that close for me, really. What it really boils down to for me with Smoke, and this is based on a lot of the stuff that our crew up at BP Toronto, which is an offshoot site of Baseball Perspectives, one of our local sites. They produce a lot of great work. It's Blue Jays focused, and they were writing about it all summer that, you know, it's as simple as Justin Smoak's making more contact. He's confident. He made some slight changes to his setup at the start of his swing. He didn't overhaul his swing. And this is the same guy, and finally he's tapping into the talent that we saw as a prospect. And I like Justin Smoak's odds of replicating what he did last year. I'm surprised at how low he's actually going in drafts right now. I think there is sort of a bias against these guys who suck for a long time and then all of a sudden figure it out. They have that one breakout year and everybody goes, well, he did it once. I'm not going to pay for a repeat, or I don't think he can do it again. And sometimes they do it. And Justin Smoak, I can't envision a scenario in which Greg Bird is better this year. I really just can't. I can't do it.
All right, nope. Matt, can you do it?
No, Greg Bird is not. No, Greg Bird is not a guy I'm interested in at all. I don't like you said, and not to mention he's a significant health risk. I mean, he's
that too.
There was rumors of him last year. I say rumors because I can't back him up that he didn't want to, that he was healthy enough to play, but was concerned about another minor injury, so he shut down his rehab assignment and all that stuff. So I don't know. I'm not questioning anybody's, you know, desire or stuff. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying, you know, the New York media is hard to play, and they will question it, and they will potentially tear someone down. And everything you look at in Greg Bird is complete small sample size everything, and everyone takes. I remember his hot 2015 season. And then when he came up for a brief cup of coffee, and then when he hit 11 home runs and hit 261 in the 40 games down the stretch. Then he missed all of 2016, and then missed most of 2017. Played 48 games and hit 190, 9 home runs. Yeah, he had a good postseason, which is encouraging because he faced a good, great pitching, obviously. But I'm taking Smoak here. I was, you know, all set to say about how he improved his contact rate significantly, and that's, you know, and George did a nice job touching on that, and the swing adjustments he made. Justin Smoak is still in a great ballpark. Justin Smoak is still probably going to hit right after Josh Donaldson, which is also a pretty good place to hit. So I'm going Smoak here, and it's really not close. I would actually, I'd probably take Smoak over Matt Olson too, and probably Gallo, and I would take Bird behind both of those two because I hate Greg Bird.
Where Bird's going in drafts, you're paying for all of the ceiling up front. He basically has to meet.
He's got that Yankee that boost. Upside. He's got that
and
you know, every player that plays for the Yankees gets a boost. That's just how it's always kind of been. And it depends on what they're going to do with the lineup. I've seen some lineup projections that have him batting in between Stanton and Judge, which I think is crazy. I think he's, you know, Judge or I know he's left-handed bat. I know Gary Sanchez is also right-handed, so you're probably going to get him somewhere in between those three guys in the middle of them. But it's a nice place to hit, don't get me wrong, but Greg Bird is nowhere near that level, and I think people are putting him on that pedestal, and it's crazy to me.
Yeah, here's my whole issue with, like, you know, even you did it, Matt, and I mean, I think we remember things more fondly than they actually were, because don't get me wrong, he had some big hits in the postseason, but he struck out at a 31% clip, only hit 240. Yes, the three of his hits
for him, that's good.
Yeah, three of his hits were home runs, and that's what people remember, were the big home runs. But, I mean, he wasn't even that great in the postseason, and people are bumping him up because they remember kind of some of these big home runs that were towering shots. I mean, I want to see this guy playing a full season worth of games for the first time in, like, 3 years before I'm going to be willing to put him into my lineup. I mean, this is a guy that I don't think he's had 400 plate appearances at the majors or the minor league level since, what, 2014? No, 2015. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to buy in on this. I'll let other people pay the Yankee tax. I believe in some of the changes Justin Smoak made. You know, one of the things that we talk about on this podcast, I don't think gets enough play on other shows and other platforms, is how much off the field issues can really have an effect on the field. You know, we've talked about it with guys like CeCe Sabathia and Gene Segura, Josh Hamilton. But Justin Smoak lost his father a couple years ago, and it really, really affected him. And he's talked about it more publicly recently because he's really started to seek help for it, professional help for it, and move past it. And I think what we saw last year was a real breakout. Aside from just real baseball changes, he made real life changes as well. And so I think that's a guy I'm willing to bank on a little bit more than a guy that has never proven he really belongs at the major league level in Greg Bird.
Right. There's a lot of anchoring with Justin Smoke that hasn't taken place yet, where we all have this notion of a guy who was terrible for a long time, and it takes a while to adjust. And sometimes guys, for a lot of the reasons like you mentioned, Justin, I mean, things that we don't know about, they struggle for extended periods of time and they don't blossom until later in their career. Some guys just, when they come up, they don't succeed right away like a lot of other people do. So we have a tendency to just write them off and think, well, that guy will never figure it out. And Smoke is a guy who has, and I think you have to be willing to embrace that idea that who we saw last year is the real Justin Smoke going forward. And I'm just surprised more people haven't so far. I just think the ADP that we see right now is just too low with him. I don't understand it. He's really good.
I think part of it's two parts to that. And one is that people who've been playing fantasy for a while remember Justin Smoke as this surefire can't miss prospect that missed.
Oh yeah.
People got burnt on him in a lot of leagues, kind of banking on, oh, this is the year, and then, you know, all of a sudden he's 29, you know, and he's never really accomplished anything and finally breaks out at the age of 30. And then I think there are a younger generation of fantasy players who don't remember Justin Smoke at all and feel like this 30-year-old popped out of nowhere, you know, and don't remember the fact that he was a first overall pick. And was supposed to be like the key to the Texas Rangers rebuild. And then
the Mariners
rebuild, yeah,
right.
And then the Blue Jays rebuild. No,
the Blue Jays. Yeah.
So I mean, I think one, either people are feeling burnt by him from, you know, 10 years of waiting for this guy to actually break out, or two, they actually really don't remember him. So I'm going to throw all four of these final guys into the same pot, and you guys tell me who you like, who you dislike. Chris Davis, Jose Martinez, Brandon Belt, Yonder Alonso. Matt, I'll start with you since there's a Cardinal homer in there for you.
See, now you're setting me up, but I actually do think for me it's Martinez because...
Of course you do.
There's significant upside here that I don't think Davis and Alonso particularly offer. I think Brandon Belt has a chance. If you're in OBP format, I'd probably go Belt just because he's going to be – I like Belt potentially hitting second in that lineup in front of Posey and all them guys. So, I mean, I like Belt in an OBP format, but if I'm doing regular 5x5, I'm going to take Jose Martinez. And then if I really want someone like Chris Davis, I'll just wait till later on and I'll grab like a Todd Frazier who's going to produce those empty – we talked about earlier, the empty 35 home runs. Wow, like you take Martinez, who's a solid batting average guy. We went over his numbers in the Cardinals pod before. You know, most of his power is the opposite way. Was second in the league behind J.D. Martinez in WRC plus and Woba going the opposite field. It's a weird profile here because he's massive dude. He's 6'6", but he's skinny. Skinny 6'6", lanky dude that doesn't hit for much power, but all the metrics say that he should. It's just a slight adjustment. He hits the ball on the ground too much. His line drives everywhere. I love what I saw from Martinez. He carried that team down the stretch last year, for what it's worth. And I just think with Alonso, we saw all the fly balls catching up to him. Chris Davis is just trending completely down in the wrong direction across the board. For the last 3 years, contact rate, expected power, all that stuff. So for me, it's Martinez, Belt, Alonso, and Davis. That's my ranking for those four.
George, what are your thoughts?
I hate all four of these guys. I don't have any interest. Look, Jose Martinez, when you say upside, though, like I'm interested in what
upside meaning like in
because statistically, like what does that look like? Because I know
you're
what
he's drafting you take the role and you're drafting him as a part-time player with a very good chance that he becomes a full-time guy. That's kind of what I'm saying.
Look, I think last year is kind of like the ceiling. I mean, 300 plate appearances.
Agreed. Agreed.
Holmes, 100 batting average. Like, that's
right. I agree with you. I think with more playing time, obviously he's not going to hit 300. But I do think he's going to hit in a decent lineup with a lot of OBP guys in front of him. So, and he has dual eligibility first base outfield. So
could he do a close approximation of what we saw from like Yuli Gurriel last year over a full season if he gets close to everyday playing
time? Power's a little more, but yeah. I think that's fair.
What's weird about Martinez is this is like we have to be able to overcome our biases as fantasy owners in a lot of cases. Cognitive biases. That's what I'm talking about. But you know, he's new to us, but he's not new to this earth. As my colleague Brett Sayre would say, he's already 29 years old. So he's always been a guy who walks a ton, never strikes out, basically.
The batted ball profile thing is awesome. That's what I like a lot.
It's weird. He hits like a guy who's a 5'9" middle infielder. His batted ball profile. It's really strange. I think he's going to be a popular like sleeper in sabermetric circles. Like however you want to define sleeper, like whatever. But I think he's going to be a popular guy within those types of leagues where guys, people who play in those leagues are really plugged in. That's my concern with Martinez. Is I think he. You might end up paying for the ceiling there, but I think he's definitely the most interesting guy of this group. I mean, Yonder Alonso, man, like nothing changed for him except he started clearing the fence more and how much of that is tied to the baseballs. And we've seen Chris Davis the last couple of years, just not great. Brandon Belt's a huge injury concern and you hate to hold that against players, but these are head injuries. These are concussions. These are totally different injuries that he's dealing with than a lot of different guys. So I think Martinez is the most interesting guy here, but I don't see like huge upside to I don't know. But I think he's the most likely guy to turn a profit for you here.
I don't know. I mean, Matt said like in an OBP league, he'd rather have Brandon Belt. And I've been on record, even as a Giants fan, just hating the crap out of Brandon Belt for a very long time. So, and that is not going to change. If I'm in an OBP league, give me Chris Davis. Give me a guy who walks at an 11 or 12% clip and has some power. Because, I mean, he could be Joey Gallo-like. You know, I mean, he could be a guy who hits, you know, last year, yes, it was a down year. But, I mean, the previous two seasons hit 38 home runs, 47 home runs. Screw the average if I'm playing in an OBP league. He's getting, you know, he could easily have like a .333 on base percentage and 35 home runs, and that's actually what the depth charge projections over at FanGraphs have him for. Yeah, he's going to strike out a ton, but like George has said earlier in the podcast, strikeouts aren't a big deal in fantasy. You know, I think that's the guy I'm going for in an on base percentage league. In an average league, that would be tough. I don't even think I'm going there.
The thing with Davis is he's trending the last 3 years is a slow decline, trending down in every way.
There is a slow decline, but he still has a better contact rate than Joey Gallo does, and we're fawning over him.
Fawning is a interesting term.
We all just said we would take him in the top 150.
Sure. Is it? Yeah.
Okay. So like again, you know what George just said, put aside your personal biases and what you think of a player because of what he's done to you in the past or what he's done. I mean, considering Chris Davis is going 100 picks later than we just, you know, or going, God, 130 picks later than Joey Gallo, he can pretty much do 80% of what Joey Gallo can do. Sure, the range of outcomes is huge, but so is it the same as for Joey Gallo. So why are we shitting all over Chris Davis for having the same profile, just, you know, maybe 80 to 85% of it, of a guy that we all just said we like?
I think because Matt touched on it, but if the home run upside isn't there anymore, like if he's, what do you have, 26 last year? If he's only hitting 30 home runs with a sub-200 batting average, it's different in OBP league. You're right. I was just looking up the numbers. He earned $12 in OBP leagues last year, which is about a almost a $3 difference.
But he also
between
only
batting
played
average
128 games last year. So
right. So when you factor in that concern that about the playing time, and then for with an injury, you know, note there next to the playing time concerns, and you know, if he's only a 30 homer guy and the batting average sucks and the counting stats weren't great last year, he doesn't run, so he's basically like a one category guy, and that category is power, which is the most eminently replaceable stat right now. That's the only issue I have with Davis for me. That's all. All
right.
It's a good argument. You made us think. I think.
Yeah, you did.
I tried. It's a really crappy group because I'm not picking Brandon Belt. I'll say I think Yonder Alonso is interesting based on where he's going. I believe he's still going outside the top 300, 307th in ADP. Really fell off in the second half. Had the Ryan Schiff effect, yeah, as I like to call it. Just raised the launch angle a little bit too much, and all of a sudden he was popping up a lot more than he should have been. I wonder if a new team, new hitting coach can help that a little bit and get him back on track. Because I do buy a little bit of the changes he made. I think sometimes these guys just go a little bit too far in the right direction to make it a bad choice. So I'm going to have some shares in deeper formats of Yonder Alonso. He's definitely not a guy I want as my first baseman, but as a util, as a reserve option in a deeper format, I'm okay with it.
I like Josh Bell. I mean, we haven't talked about him, but you know, he's another guy who hits too many ground balls. But you know, he might be like a 270 guy with 20 to 25 homers, even with that ground ball rate. He's a guy I saw in person a bunch when he was in the minor leagues, and I always came away impressed. Like going in, I was like, "Oh, it's Josh Bell, whatever." And then by the end of the weekend, when you see him for a whole series, you're like, "That dude could hit." And I don't think he's ever a superstar, but Josh Bell, I think, in deeper formats, I think, is a nice guy to target.
I completely agree. I'm a big Josh Bell guy. I've been since he was in the minors. So, and I was actually pleasantly surprised with the power output last year, because I never thought he would be a 25-plus home run guy.
And he might not be. It might just be a product of the juice balls we have. So.
Which I'm okay with, like, you know.
That's fine.
Yeah,
right.
If he ever does start hitting more fly balls, I mean, it could be fun.
Yeah, and I think he's a guy that could, you know, that should easily bring up the average a little bit next year too. So I wouldn't expect him to hit 255. I think he's more of a 275, 280 kind of guy. So
he's the big run producer now in that lineup. So
Jesus Christ, there's so many just really, really awful teams.
And that's part of the reason why no free agents are signed, because, what, a quarter of the league is trying actively not to win this year?
And then there's a number of big market teams that don't want to go over the luxury tax again, so.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful world.
It's going to be a three-season-long strike pretty soon. It's never going to end.
Oh, I hope not, because I'm really starting to make it in the fantasy industry, and that's going to put a that's going to put a huge dent in my monthly income. So, but that is going to wrap us up for this episode. George, thank you for joining us.
Hey, appreciate you guys having me on. Like I said, this is one of my favorite shows to do, and I think it's the first podcast where I haven't been asked to talk about my controversial Victor Robles takes. So,
I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do it. I'm on your side on the Robles thing, actually.
I don't think the gap between him and Ronald Acuña is as big as people think it is. It's really not.
Oh my God! Thank you so much.
And we went as far to say, and this probably isn't a big leap, but on the prospect probably did. Robles is the guy to own a redraft
for sure.
The value's there. It's insane.
Look, path to playing time is these. I'm so every time I tweet about Victor Robles, all I hear is path to playing time. It's right. Like, well, you would have said that about Cody Bellinger a year ago. So just shut up. Like
everyone's acting like Michael Taylor is a Hall of Fame player all of a sudden. Like
right, he's had one year where he objectively didn't suck, and it just happened to be last year.
And
so,
he got hot in the playoffs. So it's again, it goes to the Greg Bird discussion we had. You know, he's hot in the playoffs. So. Ooh.
Bryce Harper and Adam Eaton, they never miss any time. They never get hurt. Mm-hmm. So. Look, these types of transcendent talents, they find their way onto the field. They're not going to keep him in AAA if they're in contention in May. they're going to call him up. And talent wise, like Robles is faster. He might be a better contact hitter.
Yep. He definitely is a better contact hitter right now.
And in this current environment, and in this current environment where guys from the minor leagues like can come out and hit double digit home runs, like, look, I don't think the gap is that far as the perception is right now. So that's my take of Victor Robles. I think people are definitely sleeping on him a little bit.
Yeah, I mentioned that last week with when we were talking with James Anderson. I don't understand why Robles is going behind Acuna in redraft leagues. I think people are sleeping on him. I mean, Bryce Harper is a free agent after this year. This is the window for the Washington Nationals. If you think they care about service time, if you think they care about anything other than getting that World Series trophy in Washington before Bryce Harper leaves, you're insane. They want to win.
Also,
they want to win now.
Also, they want to keep Bryce Harper, so he might not leave.
Yeah, they're not doing that. Come on, let's be serious.
Yeah, they're not. Probably not going to be able to afford that. But also, Robles is a fantastic center fielder defensively. So you're incentivized to have him up on your major league squad. And look, James is fantastic at what he does. And he probably can articulate that idea a lot better. But Robles is a guy you want to get excited about. if you're sleeping on him, I think that's crazy.
And I don't think James is sleeping on him, but I mean I am definitely against the idea that Acuna is going to be up before Robles. I think Robles is up first. So, will wrap us up for this episode. George, want to remind people where you can reach on social media and everything you do over at BP.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at George Bissell. You can criticize my lukewarm generic takes there. You can find my fiery, flaming hot takes over at the electronic pages, as Carson Sestilio would say, of baseballperspectives.com. You can check me out also on the Flags Fly Forever podcast. Check out Tino, too. I produce that podcast as well. Thanks again, guys, for having me on. Really, really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun. Let's do it again soon.
We definitely will. Matt, what are you working on? Where have you reached?
Definitely. MD Tomp, FWFB, turn out those prospect pieces, look for them in the guide. And like you, how dare a fantasy analyst like George not make bold, outlandish claims that he can't back up? I mean, I remember that discussion on Twitter, and I was passively aggressively liking everything you were saying because the person was completely batshit crazy.
There's Twitter's a fun place. Twitter's, you meet a lot of interesting people on there.
Twitter's gonna end my life someday. That's gonna be the cause of my demise. Is ultimately gonna be Twitter.
We all fall victim to the hot take machine eventually. Like it's going to, we're gonna get stuff wrong. I just think you have to be a little. You have to have the ability to understand that you're going to be wrong sometimes and be fine with that. Like, it's just right. The way. So don't act like you know everything. We don't. We get stuff wrong all the time. But
you're so boring. You don't make the outlandish claims. Well, because they're outlandish. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, because you're going to be wrong a lot and look like an idiot a lot. It's just the way it is. So I don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
Thankfully, I am never wrong, and I never make outlandish claims because they always turn out to be true. That's why J.D. Martinez never turned into anything. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read all my work at Fangraphs, Fantasy Alarms, Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Fantrax. Hear me on these podcasts on Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Hear me on Sleeper and the Bust, Fantasy Sports Radio Network on Sundays for the Tout Wars Hour. And the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational podcast. And I think that's it, but who knows?
You sound pretty busy, Justin. I got to be honest, that's a lot of work.
He did say he slept 2 hours today, so.
Keep it up. Good stuff.
Yeah, so if anybody's hiring, I'm always looking for more work. So.
Yeah. God.
You got 2 hours to work.
Exactly. Right?
You haven't scheduled yet.
Your schedule stresses me out. I don't even have that life. So
that is going to do it for us. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.